companions. We help you discover your many layers. You peel, you cry, you wake up with fresh eyes. Question life, question humanity, question society, but most of all, question yourself.
I am Priyanka Shahara, and I'm the founder of One With Earth, which is a social enterprise that supports urban sustainability. Under One With Earth, one of our social enterprises is called Swapaholic, and I think that's really what we're here to talk about today.
So how did all of this start? What was your journey?
So I started my entrepreneurial journey many years ago, almost 15 years ago now. I started a brand solutions company called A Brand New Day. It was co-founded by me and my partner Kunal. And a few years into it, I realized that I was finding much more joy from the volunteer work that I did outside, the teaching that I was doing outside. And I had a very understanding partner who said, you know, who let me explore what it was that I was looking for. So at the time, I began to better educate myself on sustainability. You know, we didn't have much awareness on what that word meant. And this was, you know, close to 10 years ago. And we didn't have that much awareness on sustainability. Social enterprise was a word that was not on anyone's radar. So all of this was a revelation for me. So I started doing an online sustainability course at Harvard Extension School online. And then I took up a couple more because I just wanted to understand what was this about? How could I play my part? And that was really the entry point to me understanding that I wanted to use my skills and abilities and time to actually make a difference. And that's really where the journey began. And so I set up One With Earth with no idea on what the direction was going to be, what I was going to do. But I just knew that everything we did under this was going to have some kind of social impact. And that's really where we began. And then as the years passed, the thoughts crystallized, I realized that what I wanted to do was create opportunities to transform the state of, you know, urban sustainability through various ways. It isn't just about sustainable fashion. It's also about value systems, social sustainability, cultural sustainability. And One With Earth became a prototyping, a rapid prototyping rather, platform or playground for me to quickly see if any of these solutions were viable, whether they were necessary, and then how we could transform them into their own entities.
Let's backtrack a little bit. So from when you started volunteering, what was it about that point in your life that made you find that joy in volunteering? Like, was there like a switch? You know, what was it about volunteering that you really enjoyed?
I think, I've started being in India. You know, you're surrounded by the disparity of the rich and poor from a very young age. And so volunteering, you know, what we say giving back, was something that was a part of my life growing up. It always was a part of my life. And I think that over time, when it was no longer my parents or my mom being involved in that process, and it became me choosing to spend my time in that way, I realized that it was a two-way street. I was getting a lot from it. I was getting a lot of satisfaction, a lot of joy from spending my time in a way that I believed was creating some kind of impact, even if it impacted the life of just one person. You know, and I think it was more of an intuitive feeling as opposed to an articulation. I did have a lot of issues with the nonprofit sector because, you know, being in that system very often because of the lack of funding, because, and I think that's the primary reason, what tends to happen is there's no systems. It's hard to scale impact. You take two steps forward and five backwards. And, you know, kudos to the people who still managed to be very hopeful in that system, and it's very, very much required. So for me, I think it was just the joy of spending my time in that place, believing I was contributing, and thinking about how I could use my enterprise development skills to create something that could be systemized and scaled. I think that's what One With Earth represented for me, and that was the leap from the volunteering to creating an entity that can be systemized and scaled. And coming back to my point of then discovering what is a social enterprise. And that to me was a eureka moment, because I couldn't believe that something could exist that could both do good and still sustain and grow, and you pay people what they deserve. You know, for me, that was a revelation. And I realized that this is something I want to spend my life building, whether, like I said, whether I impact one life or many is yet to be seen. But the idea is to really use my skills and time in that way.
So you found your mission, you found the vision, but a lot of times it's actually quite a long journey that is wavy and complicated to get to the point where you know what the form is. Like, what exactly is that social enterprise? How does this impact look? What are the ways you're going to reach to the ends that you're going for? And how did you manage to figure that out? You know, how did that journey then evolve from when you knew that, you know, the contribution to society, contribution to environment is important, to finding that exact thing that is going to reach that kind of impact?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because for a long time I didn't. And with One With Earth, I couldn't articulate it. And even though I think we want to delve more into Swapaholic, the reason that One With Earth is so important was because for me, there was a gray area for a long time. You know, I knew I had a finite amount of capital, which was my savings over the years. And I knew that I could use that to rapidly prototype different ideas and see if any of those could manifest into something that was not just viable, but useful to the environment and, you know, to our communities. And so under One With Earth, we tried many, many things. You know, at a point we were working perhaps on 8 different prototypes and projects. And from that, we, you know, when I learned about fashion sustainability or unsustainability, as the case may be, that was a very personal thing to me. So I knew I needed to find some kind of solution to that, or at least to try my best. And that snowballed into Swapaholic. Wasn't the first idea under the umbrella. We tried many different things. And then I chanced upon the concept of swapping. And then, you know, Swapaholic was born under One With Earth. And then it developed into its own entity after that. So it now stands on its own feet. Similarly, we have another enterprise that was born under One With Earth called Dino Story. And Dino Story is just completely, you know, a different concept altogether. It creates content for children in their formative years that supports values, virtues, and life skills that are needed to shape resilient communities. So it's a different thought process, and we're trying to build community resilience in that way. And Dino Story was also born under One With Earth, and today has a series of books and workshops and sessions, and also now has a life of its own. So these are the two sort of, so far, the projects or the enterprises that have shown promise and have stood on their own 2 feet. And coming back to your question, I didn't know whether either of them would. So it started off with a quick prototype, and then it kind of snowballed and developed a life of its own.
So what came first? Was it the market research, or was it, you know, going into asking yourself where your strengths lie? What is it that you want to do? And then building something from there?
I think so much of it is intuitive. You know, because I have been a consultant, I understand that question. I understand that it feels as if it should have been a linear approach. It should have been that I said, oh, this is a lacuna, and let's do some research to find out, you know, more about it. But the fact of the matter is that these are new age business models. When you're looking at a concept of swapping and the way Swapaholic is doing it today, even if I asked our audience 5 years ago, they wouldn't know they needed this. They wouldn't know they even wanted it. So it couldn't really be based on market research, because it wasn't like I was presenting them with a product and said, hey, will this make your life easier? They didn't know that, you know? And so a lot of it was intuition. It started with an intuition to say, this can be a solution. Now, how do we systemize and scale it? Because it's been done very informally across the world. How do we systemize it? How do we make it into something that people want? Because that's really the starting point, I believe, of any business. It's not whether they feel that the environment needs it or whether they feel that they're creating some kind of impact by doing it. It needs to be personal. They need to feel that this is something that's useful. And the cherry on the top then is the sustainability piece.
So here's my big question. What I struggled with, I think, is when you're trying to do something that is towards social environmental good, and as what you said, you know, sometimes the demand is not quite there yet. People don't realize that there is a need for that. And when it comes to, I don't know, public education or, you know, certain things that that will require people to go out of their way to beyond just their selfish needs towards something that contributes to a greater whole, it's a big step. And for a lot of people, that's not really what they want to do. That's not really what they want to pay for. So yeah. Then doesn't mean that the work that is being done, raising awareness or, you know, doing all of these things that has social impact, doesn't have value in doing. But then how do you find that sweet spot between knowing that there is an impact in the work that you're doing versus the uncertainty of not knowing if there would be a demand for it, not knowing if it will be financially sustainable, and yet still pushing through with it? Like, you know, for people who are stuck in this stage, like how would you, like, what would your advice be?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I think that's really where, you know, One With Earth played a really important part for me. Because like I said, there was a finite number of resources that could go towards rapid prototyping or a MVP, you know, a minimum viable product. You have to think about, okay, this is the concept. And if I were to test it without just doing a survey, because in a survey, people don't really know what I'm talking about or how I'm going to do it. They had to see it in action. And so for us, the lowest hanging fruit was running an event. The event paid for itself because people paid for a ticket. We had to put in a little more money that showed the systems that we wanted to implement so that there would be a fair swap. So for example, from the get-go, a lot of my time was spent in developing a point system so that it would always be a fair swap, because the way swapping globally was done in an informal sector is just exchanging clothes. And sometimes you feel hesitant to give clothes that you really value because you think you may not get something of equal value in return. So we created a point system, and that's something that I had to invest more time in than money. And then, of course, I had to create an algorithm out of it, which was a little bit of money that was required. And that was something that I was willing to put into the concept. So it was really about choosing how do I use my finite resources towards the minimum viable product.
How long was the journey?
You know, from the time One With Earth was shaped, that was now 6 years ago. Swapaholic was the thought process and conversation started about 5 years ago. And the business has been operational for about four now. So, and it's still taking shape, because when you're building something that doesn't exist and you have no benchmark, people don't know about the concept. There's so much education that goes into it. It takes a number of years, and we're still asking the same questions. Where do we spend our finite resources? And today, yes, it's based on the revenue that we generate. But if we are to see growth, there are certain ideas that we have to implement. There is certain technologies that we have to harness and use. And it's a delicate dance. It's constantly thinking about that. Do we spend our resources in manpower? Do we spend it in technology? Do we spend it on marketing? Where do we spend that money? As a social enterprise, you don't have money for all of those things. It's very hard to raise capital for all of those things. So it is a delicate dance. And I think maybe, you know, if we have this conversation a couple of years later, I will have more concrete answers on what a timeline looks like. But today we're still in that phase, to be honest. And I think what really guides us is conviction. Of course, seeing some level of traction and understanding that we are doing some things right. But we are also on the flip side constantly failing, and we're constantly figuring out how to pivot and, you know, pull ourselves up from those ideas that haven't done as well?
I kind of want to go into the nitty-gritty, honest conversations part of starting a social enterprise. What were some of the skills that you realized you had to have or you had to build up while doing this work? Because it's actually a lot of work, you know, it's your project management, negotiation skills, and as well as your business model, your finances, budgeting. And what were some of the key skills that you realized, right, I need to build this up to be able to have this social enterprise of my own so that it can sustain?
I think, you know, to answer that question, it's very similar to having any business, you know, and because, like I said, I started off when I was very young, that entrepreneurial journey. Those were some of the transferable skills that I had developed over the years, you know, understanding different aspects of building a business. But the one thing that stood out for me was social media, because when I started my first business, we didn't actually need to have social media. It was a different kind of relationship building that got us work and clients. But in today's world, you have to be adept at understanding how that whole virtual social world works. And that was a challenge for me because it wasn't something that was intuitive to me. It isn't something that's natural to me. I think it was a year into Swapaholic when I actually got an Instagram account. I didn't have one up until that point. So it was a very steep learning curve and understanding what exactly does social media entail? What kind of information do people want to get from there? So initially, because my background was traditional brand solutions and design, you know, we would design posters for social media that looked like a poster that you would print out and stick up somewhere, you know, and there was a very quick evolution in understanding that's not what works. And of course, we're all still figuring it out on a weekly basis. We are trying to evolve and see what does our audience want and what do they want to see and how do we put across our messages in a relevant way. But for me personally, that was the big one.
When we last talked, you mentioned that you were venturing into TikTok.
Yes.
How's that going?
To be honest, it's actually going quite well, but not no thanks to me. The team who is handling TikTok is very young and they really get it. And again, it's a very intuitive process. There are so many times that they would, you know, present some content to me and I don't necessarily understand it. I don't understand why that would do well. And then it does exceptionally well. So, you know, these are things that we can't shy away from. And I find myself thinking more and more about these technologies and how to, even though it may not be innate to me, it's important that I understand them for the marketing side of any business, whether it's a social enterprise or not. As a social enterprise, it is a little more important because you don't have the budgets. You don't have the budgets to pay someone else to do it. You have to figure it out yourself. So I think that is one challenge as a social enterprise, that in a regular business, somehow the way the monetization strategy works, you do have budgets to do all of these little things, even if you don't have the skills yourself. In a social enterprise, you're everything, right? So I think it is important to understand that. And I can't undermine or underestimate the power of these tools that may not be natural to me.
Let's see a generational difference. Just because I think social media means quite different things for different generations. And I don't even mean like, you know, 20 years of difference, just even with like 3 or 5 years difference. It's completely different. Like my age group using Instagram, it's different from the younger generation using TikTok and the ways that they interact. And I wonder if you sense a sort of gap or difference also in terms of awareness and how information is being conveyed and how people are taking in more information and education from these social media on things that matter, like society or social or environmental issues.
Yeah, I think Gen Z and younger millennials are definitely more aware. So their radars are anyway up and more susceptible to absorbing information about these causes. But you're absolutely right. Different social media platforms cater to different audiences. You know, TikTok is for a very young, savvy audience, I find, who can assimilate information very quickly and with the least amount being said. You know, Instagram is still for, you know, millennials. And of course, Facebook is perhaps for older millennials and beyond. So, and that itself is challenging because you can't design a one size fits all across the across all the channels. So I think when you delve deep into each of these things, when it comes to marketing, you do have to figure out who you're speaking to on each of those channels and whether it's relevant to your business at all.
What were some of your observations? Did you find that it made more sense for you to target millennials or Gen Z for Shopaholic?
I think clothes are personal to people of all ages. You know, so our youngest Swapaholic, regular Swapaholic is now about, I think, 12 or 13. And our oldest is above 60. The idea here is, as a social enterprise, to really think about where's the maximum impact going to be of what we're trying to do. And the maximum impact is when we are inclusive. When we are inclusive of all age groups, all cultures, all demographics. And that's something that we have to constantly be sensitive of across all our marketing.
Are there certain observations that were interesting from the sort of consumers, the customers that you're getting for Shopaholic?
I think one change that has been for us personally quite exciting in a way, is that when we first started out, a lot of the early adopters were expats from Western countries, because they understood the concept of thrifting, of secondhand, pre-loved. They didn't have the inhibitions that, you know, Asians tend to. And so they were the first adopters. But today we have a huge mix, a lot of locals, different cultures coming together, cultures that you might have thought would take even more time to, you know, Indians, Malaysians, Chinese. For me, it was hard to imagine the level of adoption to be at this level, at this rate. And I think that was, for me, very exciting.
Were there certain key events or media highlights that really pushed Shopaholic forward?
I don't think there could be any one attribution in that sense. I think it was a lot of micro actions, a lot of support garnered from different institutions, people, government bodies. I think all of it just sort of came together to help us to get to this point. So very early on, we started doing events under PUB, which is the Public Utility Board, who takes care of Marina Barrage. And so, of course, you know, water conservation is big on their agenda. And they supported us to run large-scale events at their venue. So that was something that we got very early on. We also today are partners with the National Environment Agency. They have a campaign called Say Yes to Waste Less. And Swapaholic is one of the very few emerging SMEs as a part of that list. You know, other brands under that list are like IKEA, for example. So you can see the disparity, but the idea was that NEA gave us that platform. And so we work closely with them wherever and whenever possible. Another government agency that has helped us with funding is RAISE, which is, you know, the Center for Social Enterprises. And they've helped us with funding. They've supported us through a time when if we didn't have that funding, we would not be able to invest in manpower and technology. So the government sector in Singapore has played a very large part of supporting us from a back-end perspective. Of course, media players, influencers, they've done more of the front-end you know, support for us. So it is, I think at the end of the day, swapping is a community exercise. And if there isn't a buy-in from different stakeholders, it would be very hard for us to move forward and scale, which is why I'm so grateful to the entire community in Singapore to actually help and enable us to reach even this point.
Were you also involved in different sort of green events like Fashion Revolution?
Definitely. We were definitely, I think the sustainability sector in Singapore is quite small. And as a result of it, there are a handful of players and all of us tend to support each other and be there at these sorts of events. You know, even for Fashion Revolution, when we started off, even they were just picking up in Singapore, while they were, you know, gaining a lot of momentum globally. So I think that all of these different players have definitely helped in our growth. And hopefully we've helped contribute towards that landscape as well in some way.
I kind of want to unpick that journey a little bit, because I think it's important. What you mentioned on communities, because I think a lot of times when doing social impact work, it's not just by an individual independent effort. A lot of times it's about the stakeholders that are involved and the entire community and the social capital that you have to then be able to, you know, increase the strength of the web that you have. And that would then lend strength to the work that you're trying to build up in terms of, you know, be it outreach or the kind of support that you can have in different ways and different kinds of resources. How did that sort of relational relationship building pan out?
I mean, you're absolutely right, you know, in terms of what you say about communities. It is the way we have to look at social enterprises today, because our license to operate, our social license to operate, comes from community buy-in and the various stakeholders. So that's important. I think a lot of this is organic. So, you know, when we first began, we would reach out to our own networks of influencers, for example, and request them to join a swap or donate clothes. And they were very willing, surprisingly. You know, when we spoke to government bodies about the work that we did, or venues to say, you know, look, we, you know, we'd love to conduct a swap in this space, a swap party in this space, they were very accepting. So I think it was just step by step, you know, we had lofty ideas. Some of them failed, but in most cases, the partners reciprocated and they gave us an opportunity, you know, to express and showcase the work that we were endeavoring to do. And I think that's really how we built a network over the years. And then when you have, you know, for example, when you have one venue, then you have something to show another venue and you say, look, we did it there and it was very successful. So another venue would join on board. Similarly for influencers and similarly for customers as well. Because with customers, I think initially a lot of people came alone because it was just a very affordable thing to do. So it was almost like you came as a very functional thing just to get, you know, affordable fashion. But when they came to an event, I think the way we always wanted to present the event was that this wasn't something that you had to be ashamed of or shy of. It was really fun. There was live music. There were influencers who had endorsed it and had their clothes there. Everything was organized in racks and sizes. I think because of that, it felt so enjoyable that customers came back with friends and family. And that's also how that organically grew. So it isn't just our social media efforts that are pulling people in, because a lot of what we do in terms of a social buy-in or community building is word of mouth. And that's something that we cannot underestimate. And also that's very hard to quantify. It's also very hard to explain how any company does that. You just have to do what you're doing and sort of, you know, stick to what's authentically your brand. And then these things tend to happen.
A note to listeners out there, if you feel like the climate crisis is such a big issue that you cannot tackle, you cannot begin to tackle. Here are the small ways that you can do something. Spread the word. What are the brands that you like? What are the companies or the organizations or the NGOs or the even the individuals, the activists, the artists that you really enjoy their work and the message? Spread it, share it with people, have conversations about it. This is how you can join the effort. So I kind of also want to talk about your future plans or goals. What do you have in mind for the future?
So for me, it's always been about how do I want to spend my time? It isn't about work, because work has a connotation that it's something we have to do. And you do it from a particular time and then you switch off. For me, it was finding a way to spend my time that was integrative. So whether I'm at work or I'm at home, there's an integration between every aspect and avenue of my life. With One with Earth, that is something that is really important as a platform for me, because as we have new issues, new solutions are required. And this is a platform to create that. Hopefully in time, we will not be the only ones building it. It will be different groups of people that we can support with the knowledge capital that we've gained over time. And we can support them to also grow their ideas. So One with Earth, you know, has, I think, the capacity to become a community for people who are advocates of change and who have good ideas and need some level of resources or mentorship or ideas or information on how to actually do this. With regard to the social enterprises that are emerging from it, like Swapaholic, for example, each of them have their own trajectory. With Swapaholic, it's really about how can we scale this concept. I think that's continually on my mind. Today, we are a very operationally intensive business. Every piece of clothing or fashion item that comes in to our swap shop or to our online platform is quality checked by us. The quality control is very, very stringent to ensure that when you're at Swapaholic, you know that what you're going to swap out is of good quality. That's something that's really important to us. So being operationally intensive, it does come with limitations to scaling. So what could we do next? That's always been on our mind. And last year through the pandemic, I decided that in addition to our events, swap shop, online platform, we also needed to have a marketplace, which was peer-to-peer, that allowed people to buy and sell from one another, because that is essentially swapping as well, just in a different way. And it is also more scalable. So that's something that we've been building and will probably launch in Q1 next year. So the idea is that however you want to shop, you can now swap instead. So, or however you want to consume, you can now swap instead. Whether you like to do it physically, whether you're somebody who likes to go to events for the bustle, whether you're someone who likes to do it online, but wants to make sure that, you know, the quality is our problem, or whether you're somebody who enjoys the process of buying and selling. So that's the idea.
How do you find balance in everything that you do?
I think it boils down to, what I said earlier. It's about how I choose to spend my time. So it isn't really about finding a balance to say, this is when I have to switch off. I think I find a lot of peace and joy in the social enterprise work that I do. And so that's something that hasn't really so far been a hindrance to the rest of my life, because it's so integrated. Having said that, I am pregnant and I am having twins at the end of this year. And so
congratulations.
Thank you. And I think that that's a question you're going to have to ask me the next time that we speak, because I think I'm going to have to feel like I'm doing a little more of juggling at that point.
Do you feel positive about, the climate crisis is huge and it's an emergency. And I think a lot of young people feel quite pessimistic about the entire situation. But because you've been in this, this sector advocating and pushing for this change, how do you feel about, you know, where we're going?
I think it's a really prudent question, and it comes up especially now that I'm having my own children. You know, it's something that you need to think about. And I do feel hopeful. I think my purview on the climate crisis is that we all have to feel hopeful. We all have to be hopeful. We have to work on micro actions that can create change. You know, we have to play our part. And I think that in order to play your part, you have to be hopeful. And the pessimism can make the situation much worse, you know, and not just in terms of, you know, the making the environment worse, but the pessimism also has the capacity to reduce our collective consciousness. So positive ideas, positive thoughts, hope, these things really raise our collective consciousness. And that's something that we need at a time like this, when the world is in a crisis. Together, we need to know that we, as individuals, play a part, and every step counts.
Thank you for saying that. I just wanted to make that point because, you know, every day we're seeing news of wildfires, of floods, of people losing their homes. And I think it can be a lot of information to take in for people, especially people who are more sensitive, more emotionally attuned, and also aware of these issues. And it can get to a point where young people might feel like, you know, there is just too much and it is out of control and it feels like there's nothing that they can do. But, you know, on your point that we have to feel hopeful in order to play our part, that's a very important point that I think everyone would really appreciate hearing.
And I think just to add to that, Fee, you know, with the social enterprises that we're trying to build, we're trying to create options for you to take those micro actions with convenience, or those micro steps. That's the idea. Even with Swapaholic, it isn't that much effort. It's really convenient. It's really fun. All you have to do is show up, you know, and that's the way I'm looking at the social enterprise sector growing, because then it creates a sense of hope and you don't constantly feel like you're giving something up. Because when you feel like you're giving something up, it can actually, you know, it can make you feel pessimistic. It can make you feel like, oh my God, now I have to give up my life to do this particular thing. But the idea is that if we design and shape and think about social enterprises in a way that are convenient and fun and fit into your lifestyle, you realize that sustainability is actually not a noose around your neck, but something to celebrate.
On the point of showing up, I think that's so important. And I think people underestimate how much of an impact that can be, because it's not just about, you know, showing up for events. It's also showing up for, be it artistic conversations, activities, or even just showing up for conversations that people want to have, or holding space for conversations around the climate, just being able to have a friendship circle or, you know, connect with people who care about these issues, be able to talk about it, be able to have that kind of emotional release, which is also stress release, anxiety release, and then come together and think, right, what are the ways in which we can do something together? What are the ways in which we can support the people who are trying to do something? Because I feel like there are people who mean well and want to do something, but often it kind of feels difficult to gain the traction or difficult to gain the participants. And actually just being a participant, just going and being present is so important, and it's so helpful for people who are doing the work. So kind of, yeah, final questions. I ask this to every person I interview. If there is one thing that someone could do to create change in this world, what would that be?
So the phrase I'm using this year is about swapping your mindset. It isn't about swapping fashion. It isn't about, you know, swapping resources. It's just about swapping your mindset. Think about how you can make that change in your mind, because it will translate into every action that you take. And that's the tiniest, tiniest thing that we can do.
I have a really random question to end things off. What is your favorite onions dish?
Favorite onions dish? Maybe a caramelized onion dip.
I think that's like top on everyone's list, caramelized onions. So, thank you. Where can people find out more about your work?
So swapaholic.com or onewith.earth are good starting points. And of course, if anyone wants to reach out, then they know how to get through to me by just asking you. So that's the other way.
What are your social media channels names for Instagram and TikTok?
So it's Swapaholic U, Y-O-U, for all the channels, actually.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Fee. This was so fun. Hope to see you very soon.
Peel the layers and be the change. Change-making work is tough. Sometimes it feels like all the odds are against you and it's a constant upward battle. Onions Talk podcast keeps you going when times are tough and crystallizes learning that you can apply on your impact work. My name is Fia and I'm here to support you. If you're not yet on this journey, give Onions Talk a listen. Be inspired, be touched, be motivated. Follow me on LinkedIn or Instagram at @feyeh_neo for updates, workshops, and future events. Onions Talk was born out of INSEP, International Network for Socially Engaged Practitioners. If you like this episode and would love to support, subscribe, leave a rating, write a review on iTunes, and consider donating. Your gift will allow me to continue supporting changemakers in a more sustainable way. Onions Talk is on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, and most other podcasting sites. If it's not there, send me an email at heyonionstalk@gmail.com. Special thanks to Andrea for the music. Catch you next episode.